Go for it, Joe.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the April 4th, 2018 Pony Sync call. I'm not sure if we have any RFCs to look at. I think, yeah, we do have at least one that we can kind of discuss and talk about a little bit. There's already been some discussion there so far. This is the RFC that Benoit is working on for. It's entitled Structural Subtyping Opt-Out. It's pull request 121 in the RFC's repo. There's been some discussion on it already. I just wanted to see if we wanted to discuss anything here synchronously. There's been some back and forth between me and Benoit over the in the comment thread about some of the syntax ideas. I think I so far had the the most recent comment there. I don't know if we want to talk about it any further or just leave it at the discussion in the GitHub thread. Benoit, is there anything you want to talk about here on the call?
Yeah, I just wanted to mention that my only worry with your syntax idea is that we would have to, in the compiler implementation, we would have to check every time we access the provide list of a type, we have to check whether it's an is or an isn't. And yeah, there is the potential to miss some of these cases. So that's not a big concern, but I think it's still something to have in mind when discussing those syntax alternatives.
Yeah, I think that's true. Maybe one workaround for that would be to internally represent. I mean, so no matter how you type it, the only thing that, you know, in the sort of proposal modification that I put forward, the only thing you can ever have isn't for is an empty interface. And it doesn't matter which empty interface you put there internally, we're going to treat it all the same. So it's possible that we could treat it as an is provides list, but just like have some internal type, like in instead of pointing to like a another trait or another interface or a type union, the provides list would point to this, like, sort of like, I don't know what to call it properly, but like a void, or no, it's not a subtype of anything type. And then, so that way you could still treat it like an is provides list internally. Anywhere where you're checking to see if it's a subtype of its provides list, you see, oh no, it's not a subtype of anything, because we have in subtype.c, we'd have, rules for when you see this special case of like not a subtype of anything, you encounter it there. I guess just to kind of state it again, like my kind of main concern about using annotations for this is that it using an annotation that like that helps to determine correctness of a program seems a little bit like going beyond what conceptually annotation should do. Sean and I were actually talking a little bit about some other ideas for things that might cause compile errors through annotation, but it was more along the lines of like enforcing additional restrictions, such as like specifying a match must be exhaustive. So it's sort of like an opt-in linter almost in the compiler that lets you like annotate and say, okay, in addition to the normal type checks, this should also pass this specific test. What concerns me about this annotation is that other it's not adding another test, or it's not adding a special instruction for like code generation. It's like it actually has a type system meaning, and then I guess with regard to implementation, that like that annotation would need to get attached to. I feel like it's almost the same problem as when you talk about having to check for isn't everywhere, because you have to check for this annotation everywhere where you're checking on subtyping as well. Like you'd attach the annotation to the type in the expression pass, and then carry it with you, and then know that. Or maybe you have an idea for implementation that's simpler, but it seems like a similar problem where, but it seems even more obscure because annotations are something that feel to me a little bit more like, which is perhaps the wrong way to feel about it, but to me it feels like an annotation is like you are adding an additional constraint or restriction on top of what the compiler already does, instead of like, I guess another way to put it is that like other features should not depend on like type system correctness should not depend on annotations for your example to be correct. I don't know. Maybe that's an artificial restriction, but that's kind of just how I'm feeling about it at the moment.
So my initial idea when I proposed the annotation syntax to the compiler was to have a way to have a syntax that could represent various things without having the need to reserve new keywords or new symbols every time we want to add some syntax. And just to diverge on the implementation bit of the structural subtyping of opt-out with an annotation, it would simply be a test in a check in some function of a subtype.c that checks structural subtyping. So it's not really an invalid. And to give you an idea of for the annotation system, I was inspired by C++ and the standard attribute systems, so which was introduced in C++ 11, I think. And in C++, they use attributes for various things, including things that can cause compiler errors. For example, there is the no discard attribute, which means that you must use the result or function. So that's a bit different of the annotation I'm proposing here. But I'm personally not seeing annotation as something that should only modify small things after generation or things like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think my original take on this, my original response in this thread, may have been too limiting to what annotations should do. I wasn't thinking through cases like I think the no discard case is a good example, because that actually came up in the same conversation I mentioned with Sean, where we were talking about the exhaustive match. Because I was saying, hey, this exhaustive match thing could be an annotation, because it's sort of in like another thing that might, you know, be an annotation like this for an optional like constraint would be something like this no discard. And I actually brought up the no discard attribute from C++ as an example in that conversation with Sean. For some reason, this still feels different to me than the no discard, and I'm still trying to understand whether that is a real difference or just like an understanding, you know, that I need to overcome, like just I need to reframe my view on it. I think what feels different about this is that if you have code with the no discard attribute in C++, and then everything compiles fine, and then you take no discard away, like if you remove the attribute, everything will still compile fine, which I think is maybe the right litmus test for what I'm thinking of. Whereas I think that in your example, this annotation, like if you have something that compiles with the annotation and then you take the annotation away, that's not guaranteed to compile. Like you may have broken it by removing the annotation. Like you may have broken the correctness of the types. And I think that's maybe the difference that I'm seeing here.
Yeah, that's a good point. So,
let me know when you guys are done talking about annotation, not annotation, because I still don't understand how this actually really solves the underlying problem, and I'd like to talk about that a little when we get there.
Talk about that now. That's fine.
So the problem as I see it is that particularly when using like generics, there's a pattern that people that want to do where it's going to say this, I'm going to either be an A, whatever the type is, or some default thing, which is often none or whatever, or in your case, Benoit, it's empty there, right? That's the case that you're really talking about in this particular case, right, Benoit?
Yes.
Right. So the problem then arises if I make A be the same type as my default, but it has perhaps a different reference capability, right?
The same type or a separate type. So right. Any, for example.
So I think I don't see how this fixes the problem. I can see how this fixes a symptom of the problem, where if the default is a thing which is an empty interface, we don't want it matching to an any or whatever. But couldn't I create this exact same problem all over again by saying I have a generic type and inside it it's going to be like, it's going to be an A or a blah, and a blah is a full-blown class, and somebody could then use this as a, say, good, give me whatever this thing is, a blah, where I'm going to be holding blah refs, but we've set the default as blah vals, and then we're going to have the same problem. But there, then, we do want structural subtyping for other uses or whatnot. Did that make sense?
So, I'm not sure I understand your last example. Could you maybe?
If instead of empty or none, right? Like my default was like, my default is string, right?
Yeah. Okay.
And then my container, but my default is a string val, right? Or it's a string ref. And then somebody says they want to use the container with a string val, we're going to run into the same problem, aren't we?
Yes. And so, right. Yeah, so this particular RFC only fixes some part of the problem when your default type is a marker type. You want to mark that some, for example,
okay.
That's
kind of what my comment on it was probing at, because I was like, I don't see how this fixes the problem. It addresses one particular way that this could become a problem. So I guess my concern would be is that we're solving it for this one particular case, but we come along sometime later with a solution for other cases, perhaps that encompasses this, and then we have this sort of vestigial thing hanging around.
Yeah. So the idea for this RFC came to me when I was working on implementing another RFC that I'm going to propose in the future, which is the relative complement RFC, which would introduce a new kind of complex type, where you could say, for example, in a union, you can say that you have either A or B, and with that new construct, you could say that you want to have a type which is an A, but is not a B. So that, for example, instead of saying that,
So we could say list can be an A but not none.
Yes, for example. And so that also solves the problem that is solved by this RFC. But then I realized that, for example, if we take HashMap, mm-hmm. In HashMap we want the constraint to be any type except map empty or the other type that which means that if you want to instantiate a map of any, you have to manually remove the map empty type. So maybe I'll write it in chat. Maybe that will be more clear.
Okay. I understand. When put together with the other bit, I understand now. Right. So.
Yeah. So you want this RFC with where you can say in the type definition that you don't want it to be a subtype of any, so that when supplying type arguments to generic types or generic functions, you don't have to type a complex type equivalent as the type argument.
So would that mean that like empty and none are not subtypes of any?
Sorry, I didn't hear what you said.
Would we want to make like empty and none does empty actually exist in the hash map stuff?
Yes, empty is the it's a private type defined in the implementation of the hash map.
So we would want empty to be non-structural. Do we want none to be non-structural?
No, I don't think we would want that. So that would mean that list, for example, which uses none and none as the default type, we would want to change that to a custom type.
Yeah, and one of the things I kind of called out in this RFC is I didn't want to change any public types like none. Changing none to a non-structural type would break a lot of user code and possibly mm-hmm. standard library code too.
Yes.
So this would basically, this would be useful for these private like empty types basically. That is what this would be useful for.
Yeah, it's like saying you have a private type that will never match any external type because the external type can't reach the private type. Like it's definitely useful in this hash map and all these other set types. And I've used the pattern a few times before too. So, let me ask you this, Benoit. Let's say we merge this RFC as is and continue with it. And then you come back later with your RFC to try to tackle the general case about improving the constraint language. Is this something where we could, once that general case is solved, maybe kind of remove this annotation and give people a path for migration to the general case, solve a solution?
No, that would still be needed because
of the any.
Yeah, let me write an example in chat. So,
yeah. Okay. I'm glad we had this conversation. I completely understand the problem now in a way that I didn't before when put together with the other stuff.
So, Sean, while Benoit's typing, Sean, how does this address your question about, like, if I want to have something that is not an empty marker, if this general solution that Benoit is talking about with a future RFC does not solve this specific case, then does it also not solve Sean's specific case about, like, a, like, let's say I have, like, an error class that I want to distinguish from, like let's say I have, like, a generic type and I want to do, instead of A or empty, it's A or error, and my error class has some information I want to convey back up the stack. I think that's an example of the kind of pattern you were talking about, Sean, that's not solved by this. Is that also something that's also not solved by this generic solution in a future RFC?
I could see a problem with non-structural where, like, I want to be able to have, say this is some type of error, right? And I have different error types in there as my marker things, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, the issue is not whether you ever choose to make error part of A. It's the fact that the compiler doesn't know, because you gave any as A, the compiler doesn't know that error will never be part of A. As far as it knows, it can be.
The worry I have with non-structural is that it's saying this can't structurally match. We're basically trying to make it not be in any, right? Which I don't know. I need to think on that some more. But well, I understand the goal here.
The later annotation suggestion that Benoit gave in the thread was, instead of calling it no structural, like calling it like no supertype, you're creating a type that is not a subtype of anything except for itself.
And that, I think that sounds like it could be better.
I see Benoit, you typed out an example in the chat. Can you explain what we're looking at?
Yeah. So, in the first, two lines, so you define HashMap, the constraint of HashMap, as being any except map empty. And so when you instantiate that type, you have to type the whole constraint or the whole type as because it's basically with the relative complement operator, it's a case by case basis. So you have to specify that you want any except MapEmpty, both in the definition and in the instantiation. And on the other hand, if you define MapEmpty as being no structural, then you can use simply any as the constraint, because MapEmpty won't be a subtype of it. And so when you instantiate, then you can also use just any, because there is no problematic subtype.
Yeah, so but I guess, so we should be clear, the first example would only affect cases where you wanted to have a hash map of any. If you're doing like let A equals hash map string, you don't need to specify the relative complement operator and map empty because there is no the string is not a subtype of, or sorry, map empty is not a subtype of string no matter what.
Yes, and there is also another problem, which is that since MapEmpty is a private type,
right,
you can use the first syntax in another package.
Right. Yeah. It makes sense. I guess the only workaround, if we wanted to proceed without no structural, probably the workaround we'd want to use would be something along the lines of, like, either your empty type has to be public, or it has to be, or we define something in built-in, like empty, and then you use that in these collections, and then that possibly creates problems if you have, like, nested collections, where the underlying collection assumes that you're not keeping the empty type there. So yeah, I agree with your point here, and I think that in my case that I was kind of probing about, which is like, let's say I have a type called result, and it's either any or error. Well, yeah, it would be this, like. Yeah, like something like this, like any relative complement error, and I think that would be okay to type in a. It would be okay to type publicly because, like, in cases where you're trying to actually convey some information, it's not just a marker. It's okay to have to type out the full type here, and it actually makes sense why you should. Yeah. Okay. So I think, yeah, you kind of convinced me that we can solve this specific problem with the no structural type, that it will still be needed when we have the general solution, but the general solution will be able to solve Sean's case where you have something other than an empty marker.
I feel like the RFC should be updated to have more info about the other one as well, because I don't think this RFC makes a lot of sense on its own. Like, it says, like, it'll be covered in the complex RFC, but there's nothing there about what's in the complex RFC. So I wouldn't be able to read this RFC without having had this conversation and understand why this one. Right, in relation to, I think, because it goes hand in hand with the other.
Yeah, okay, so I love that. And we'll continue the syntax conversation on the ticket.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day, like, I would not... I probably would not block this RFC over it being an annotation, but I would kind of prefer we found something different for it, but that's kind of my point of view. Anyway, I appreciate the time that you spent on this, both, you know, formulating it and explaining it on this call.
No problem.
All right, we are nearing the halfway point here. after talking about this one RFC. Before we go on to issues and pull requests, is there anything in particular that people want to talk about now before that?
It turns out that Google Bench has now been released 1.4.0. So I would like to... bring that into the tree so that GBench is pointing at a nice solid tag rather than out in the middle of nowhere, which is where it is now. And hopefully get that in the next day or so. And then at some point, I assume we're going to have a release of Pony, correct? Some point in the near future.
Correct.
Yeah, okay. So for posterity, can you give the pull request number for that? For your pull request about GBench?
Let me look.
Oh, I see 2599.
Yes.
Yeah, so... Yeah, my opinion I gave last time we talked about this is that I'm in favor of moving forward with this sort of approach, because I think that in the worst case that we decide we don't like it, we haven't lost anything, because git subtree does not lock us in. It's still source code that is basically copied into our repository that we can, you know, effectively it's the same as what we have now, plus some metadata about how to keep it up to date. So I'm in favor of moving forward with this approach. As far as I'm concerned, if you think the pull request is in a good state, like, you know, cleaned up and ready to be merged, and like, I make one final pass over the README that you wrote, and as far as I'm concerned, it could be merged in, but others can voice their own opinions.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm becoming a little hesitant at the moment about subtree. I've been spending the last week or so, 2 weeks, looking at Git, and I've had a pull request, hopefully making it through there. And there's a notion of currently preserve merges, which in the README I point out as a mechanism for updating a branch. They're now coming up with a new notion called recreate merges as opposed to preserve merges. And I just tried it today, and the recreate merges that they have doesn't work with subtree, which was I was hoping it was going to make that simple. And as I discovered today, that doesn't appear to be the case. Now, maybe I've made a user error or something like that, and so I'm trying to check on that. In the meantime, if I don't feel comfortable that subtree is a good way forward, and at this moment I'm ambivalent and unsure. At a minimum, before we may, in the next few days, I'll make that decision. And if I'm not feeling super comfortable, I will put in 1.4 just as a big blob as we have it now. And we're no worse or no different than we are now, but we have Google Bench sitting at a nice tag point. Does that sound reasonable?
Yeah, I think it sounds reasonable to me.
Okay. Like I said, I still like subtree, but I was hoping this recreate merges was going to help it, even make it better, and it's not. And so I need to check on why that is with the guy that added that feature. And then see if I can make a decision. But in any case, I would like to get 1.4 in there, whether it's on just a big blob or whether it's off of this change here. Okay?
Sounds good.
All right.
On the release front, I hope to do the release sometime towards the tail end of next week.
Okay. Sounds good. So that's the only thing I had.
Okay, well, in that case, you can look at some of the other issues on the table. One of them that I recently spent some time looking at was Gordon's pull request for LLVM6. I was able to...
That's $25.95, by the way.
Oh, excellent. Thank you. Yeah, $25.95. I was able to get the Docker image to build. I would have pushed that update to the branch, but I think it's on Gordon's private pull request. So I see that there's also been responses here. So Gordon wrote 3 hours ago, yes, there are still problems with LLVM 6 on Linux, but different from 4 and 5. I turned on the workaround again for the time being, which is why the CI tests are passing. So since we have 4 and 5 support tentatively merged with a workaround, do we want to merge LLVM 6 with this workaround we can get the OSX build passing?
I say yes.
I would tend to agree as well. As long as I would prefer to update that comment the one I commented on. It says, figure out the reason LLVM 4 and 5 produce bad code, and maybe just amend the comment to say the reason LLVM 4, 5, and 6 produce bad code. Make sure that the make file caveat about when you compile with LLVM 6 shows you the same caveat that the support is experimental. With that, yeah, I think that we should try to merge it and just get it in master.
Do we want to keep LLVM 4 around at that point?
As far as I'm concerned, we don't need to, unless anyone feels differently. 3.3.9.1 is still going to be our stable touchstone for until we get the 4.5.6 issue, 4.5 and 6 issues figured out. 3.9.1 is going to be our recommended one to fall back to, but I don't see any reason to keep 4 around.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, so we could merge 6 and then kill off 4.
Yeah, I think. I think it needs OSX fixing still.
Yeah.
Is anybody able to give that some attention? Let me look at the build log.
Currently, it's fading because it doesn't find some enumeration in some value in an LLVM enumeration, which I'm not sure why.
Okay.
Especially since it's building correctly on Linux.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I will. I'll copy that out of the log and into the ticket so that somebody who comes upon it can understand what's going on without having to scroll down through that. I don't have an OSX box, but I could try to use... I forget, does Travis let you SSH into the build? Or is that the kind of thing that you can only do with a paid account?
Only with the private accounts.
Okay. Yeah, I guess that would just have to be trial and error sort of thing with a 30-minute iteration time for me. I don't have an OSX box around where I could try to dust off my old one. But, I'll just paste it into the ticket for now, and we can try to get that.
Paste in the ticket, and I'll see if I can get... We can put something on the Twitter account as well. See if sometimes folks can help with that. I have OSX, but I just know I could say, oh, sure, but I'm not actually going to have time. So,
yeah.
I have an OSX box that I just got going to try to ferret out a problem I was having with Git, and so I might try to look at it too.
Okay, cool. The reason I was coming back to this actually was because I have reason to want to try to take a look at what it would take to get us supporting some basic WebAssembly stuff, which specifically I think a reasonable first target might be to try to get synchronous primitive functions callable from a WebAssembly environment as if they were just like C functions, and then kind of move on from there with figuring out what needs to be done with the runtime. So one of the things that I dealt with in that process was basically that LLVM 6 is where it's at for making sure you have like a stable WebAssembly build chain in LLVM. So this is one of the steps along the way toward that. Sorry it took me so long to kind of give this my attention building the image. I had tried a few times before, but like the image upload takes so long that I had to kind of dedicate some attention span to it. So with that said, let's take a look at what else is in the backlog, unless anyone else has things to bring up. I opened a pull request, 2625. Matthias says that...
2625, did you say?
Yeah, 2625. Okay. I was trying to pull a Pony binary into a Ubuntu 16.04 Docker image, and doing that over the weekend, and seeing that the GPG was saying that the string was not a key ID, and after reading a different ticket where I saw some other key IDs thrown around, I used one of those and it worked. I'm not sure. It seems like Matthias says that the one that my GPG was saying is not a key ID is a key ID for him. So I don't know what to make of that. But.
Yeah, there's some. The best I figured out on this point is that there's something weird going on.
Yeah, and I guess I should answer that. I should clarify that it was not Ubuntu 16.04. I was just looking at Matthias's comment when I said that. I was doing it on a Debian Docker image, not an Ubuntu Docker image.
Might be related. Maybe it's the GPG version that supports for different keyIDs. So the I think it's two keyIDs here separated by whitespace that reference some subkey or something.
Yeah, it's interesting because now that you mention that, I see that the first 8 characters of one string is the last 8 characters of the other. And yeah, the white space seems significant, but I guess that just needs more investigation. Right. I'm going to label this as just needs investigation until we figure out what's going on there. And I'll label it with do not merge as well until we get a handle on it. Okay. Looking at other pull requests, 2615 is one that's marked as needs discussion during sync, but I don't know if I don't know if we want to discuss it. Benoit, Matthias, are you guys interested in discussing this here, or just leave it for discussion in the ticket for now?
So I have two questions on that. So first, so as Matthias said, do we want to also make the hashes in the runtime 64 bits?
In which places are those hashes used? Are they?
It's only in the hash map. So for a lot of things, like mainly the garbage collection stuff, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, it's a good question. I think that in a hash map, the issue is not as pronounced because it's, like I said at the end of my comment, I think it in a hash map, it's only a performance loss if you have a collision, right? Like, you can still continue on to pass the collision to resolve it. So it may not be a big deal. And in that case, like, we could actually measure whether 32-bit hashes have, like, whether it's actually performance loss or whether it's a wash or whether, or which one is actually better. We can measure whether the hash map performs better with 32-bit hashes, fitting within a word, but possibly more collisions, or if it performs better with, like, 64-bit hashes where it's two words and fewer collisions.
Okay, yeah, so that makes sense. And my other question is related to performance. And I'm wondering if having 64-bit hashes on 32-bit machines isn't a performance problem. And what I'm wondering if we couldn't have two hash functions, one that would return U size and that would be used when collisions aren't a big problem and when you want performance, and another function which would return a U64 or maybe a U128 when you want a very low collision rate.
Right.
So yeah, would that make sense?
Yeah, I had the same thought go through my head when I think I was writing this comment. I didn't say it, but I think that addresses my concerns well, because I'd still have the option to do a 64-bit hash when I know that that's what I want. I guess that the only downside I can think of is that we'd require the hash function interface, if you wanted to provide an object that is hashable, and you want to implement the hash function interface, you have to implement both of them. Or possibly we could have the 64-bit one be default and then just like truncate to get the 32-bit hash.
Yeah.
As a default.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I agree that we want to make that the default.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. I guess the question is it acceptable to ask people to implement both hash functions to meet the hash function interface? I think probably yes. And maybe we can provide a default so they don't have to implement both if they don't want to.
Yeah, and maybe we could have the function on different interfaces.
That's true. Yeah, I guess you're right, because for example, in HashMap, you don't care if a 64-bit hash is implemented. You care about the 32-bit hash. And in other cases, we just want to make sure that standard types meet both hash interfaces. Like, you could say hash and hash 64, for example, if you wanted to do it that way. And then, for example, what I'm hashing in my application is just strings, and we can make sure that the built-in types meets both hash function interfaces, and that way I can use hash 64 and be happy with it, and other people can use, just dot hash and have it be U size and platform dependent. I think that makes sense to me. I know Sylvan was the one who kind of raised this concern in the first place on the sync call where this happened before, so I don't know if you would have anything to add, but I think having two hash functions meets my goals.
Yeah, so I get the only question remaining is whether we want the larger hash function to be 64-bit or 128.
Good question.
Yeah, because if you want to take the local, if you want to have one hash with performances and one hash with low collisions, then I think it would make sense to take it to take the larger value possible.
Probably yes. I'd have to examine in my case whether a 128-bit hash is what I want, but if you give me that's hard to say. Maybe for built-in types like Stream, we could provide three hash functions. I don't know. I'll think about it a little bit.
You get a hash function. You get a hash function. Everybody gets a hash function.
Yeah. I'll have to think about that question. I'll type up your question and the fact that I have to think about it as a comment in this thread.
Okay.
I have a thing I forgot to bring up at 4 that perhaps I could bring up now.
Yeah, go ahead. While I'm typing this comment, feel free.
So two things. One is related to you might have seen that Dipin opened a PR. What number is that? 2623 to update the instructions for building from source on CentOS in Red Hat Enterprise Linux because they were out of date, and that also we get there are errors that occur when you try to run the S, et cetera, and whatnot. One thing is we're planning on opening PRs at some point a couple weeks from now to provide Docker images that can be run probably with just a single LLVM version for CentOS and also for Alpine Linux so that we don't break those in the future accidentally. Where most of the stuff would happen, you know, in Ubuntu, but we can also cover those to make sure they don't get broken. And I don't know if you've seen it, but we have issues that open semi-regularly our build system currently. When we build stuff for releases, we're creating our RPM packages on an Ubuntu system, which leads to cases where on like some versions of like RPM systems or Debian systems even, where it doesn't actually install correctly. And there's services, the PPA service, for example, from the Ubuntu folks, and the Fedora folks have something similar. It's a COPR. And Dipin's going to be doing some work to switch us over, our build stuff over from doing it on a machine at Travis to where we can we submit our stuff off to the COPR stuff and the PPA stuff. They will build packages for all of the versions that we tell them to, which should work on each of those because it's pointing at the correct libraries and everything where you would expect them to be, and folks shouldn't run into install issues with it.
It's a model for Pony too. So you were talking about Volume.
I'm sorry, Matthias, was that you?
Yeah. So you were talking.
So you sound really far away. Right, can you get closer to the mic?
About Volovo, right?
No, this is for Pony.
Ah, cool. Yeah.
Yeah, no. The way, Joe, I muted you because I couldn't hear Matthias over the sound that was coming from yours. So we've had people who've reported problems when trying to set up Wallaroo installing Pony. So we have a project to make installation of Wallaroo easier. And a big part of that is making installation of Pony easier and more bulletproof. So there'll be PRs coming for that probably in 2 to 3 weeks.
Yeah, this is awesome. So packaging is in general a pain, and the only way to solve it properly is to build the package on the system that you intend to run it on.
Yep.
So it's yes.
Yeah. So that's what Ubuntu's PPA stuff is for. Your COPR stuff. So yeah, we'll switch Pony over to using that.
Awesome.
Which should help for a whole bunch of cases. I'm unmuting you now, Joe.
Cool. Sounds good. Sorry about the keyboard noise earlier.
Is that what that is? I thought it sounded like you were kind of in like a creaky old rocking chair.
Well, I am in a rocking chair as well, but I didn't think that was making any noise at all.
But, I mean, in a rocking chair just seems very green space.
What? I am indeed in a rocking chair, but, yeah.
The fact that you're in a rocking chair, the smile on my face right now, because you are in a rocking chair, hurt myself. I'm smiling so much.
Not here in green space, and it's getting greener every day now that the snow is gone.
I'm in gray space. It's always the same gray.
Anyway, yeah. I think we're near the end of the call, but if anybody has anything else they want to bring up, feel free to do so. But I know we didn't get to a lot. I see that there was a needs discussion during sync tag applied by Matthias to pull request 2623. Add instructions for CentOS, Red Hat, Linux build from source. I think this is maybe related to the kind of effort that Sean was talking about, but...
Yeah, that's the first part of what I mentioned was that we're going to be opening PRs to have where we test against a single LLVM version against CentOS 7 and Alpine to be part of the CI process to make sure that we don't accidentally break those again.
Yeah. So it seems that there's like an invalid pointer issue. Anybody run Valgrind recently on Pony Master? That might be a good next step.
Yeah. So are you typing right now, Joe?
Yeah.
Okay. Darn. So it's probably the typing and not the rocking chair. Damn it.
Here, I'll rock a little bit. Do you hear this?
Yes, I really know. No, it was not the typing. That's the rocking chair. Yes.
No, okay. So I think what's going on is my laptop has a sort of a loose a screen up and down hinge. I think that might be creaking.
Okay.
Anyway. Interesting. I mean, I bet it's right next to the microphone, too. It's not very loud at all.
Yeah,
all right. Real getting the behind-the-scenes look today, folks.
Oh, my God. It sounds like the sound they use for, like, bed springs in comedies when somebody's having sex in the room next door.
All right. Well, thanks, everybody, for attending the... April 4th sync call and
have a good one, folks.
Yes.